Hey guys, Sean here. Just wanted to pop in real quick and give a little intro tag to this little bonus episode you're about to hear. So episode 14.5 is a special little episode. I had the opportunity to sit down with Jonathan and Steven from Team Covenant at Worlds this year in May and talk a little bit about, you know, their general involvement in the LCG community and specifically what they're doing for Arkham. They recently released their Mythos tokens, which are compatible with the Arkham game. And obviously, as you've heard in the podcast prior, we're big fans of Team Covenant. We really enjoy the work that they do and the value they add to the LCG community as a whole. So it was a nice treat to sit down and talk to these guys. They're really down to earth, really fun to chat with. So I will ask that you forgive the background noise. I did my best to find a little quiet alcove in the FFG Event Center, but there were still many, many games of X-Wing being played. You'll hear buzzing of menu items in the diner being served up. Again, I will ask your forgiveness in the background noise, but I do think the audio quality came through that you can basically hear us talking without any actual impediment. So, without further ado, please enjoy this little interview we did with Team Covenant.
Mythos Busters, investigating the mystery, monsters, and madness of Arkham Horror, the card game.
All right, guys, we're here at May Worlds 2017.
Star Wars Worlds.
And I'm joined by Steven and Jonathan from a little place you might have heard of, Team Covenant. And we're going to talk a little bit about Team Covenant's involvement in Arkham.
Excellent.
So guys, you know, I have to assume that most of our listeners, if they've gotten so far in that they're listening to a dedicated podcast for Arkham, chances are they've heard of Team Covenant in passing.
Well, that's the hope,
but,
I think,
but
for sure.
But just in case, what is Team Covenant?
Team Covenant, so we started out, we actually just celebrated our 10-year anniversary,
congratulations.
Thank you. So we're a tabletop gaming retailer and essentially content creator, and looking to just add as much value to the space as possible. And it really started when Zach's the CEO, Jonathan and I are brothers.
Yes.
We all went to Chelsea, Oklahoma. It's a school together.
Okay.
So we knew each other growing up, and Zach and I were really involved in the competitive card game scene. Like, we played the Star Wars TCG and like Dragon Ball and Pokemon and these kinds of things.
Full stop. Star Wars TCG or Star Wars CCG?
TCG. Oh, the Wizards version with
darn,
the dice.
Darn.
We also played the CCG, but Zach was really into that whenever I first kind of met him.
Okay.
And that was when it kind of folded and Wizards got the rights
sure.
to Star Wars. And so I was like, well, let's try this new one out. And we started playing it, and of course we loved it. And that was, I don't know if it was because I was a child, essentially, or because it was a great game. I haven't revisited it since, but we had a lot of fun playing that game.
That's one I recently purged from my collection.
Yeah.
You know, like every once in a while, you gotta you know, burn it down to make room for new growth.
Absolutely. So we grew up in the space, you know, and we played games together. That's how we became friends, and, you know, we went to local game stores, we played in the space, we ordered cards online even every now and again. And like at every turn, we were just kind of underwhelmed, I guess.
Sure.
A lot of stores just really playing only to the Magic crowd. A lot of stores really dark and dirty and non-inviting. And you know, the traditional kind of bad example that you would expect from some stores.
Random equipment laying off in the corner
from
whatever the game store was converted from.
Just sure,
like,
exactly.
There's an espresso machine over
exactly.
there that just, no one's using.
Just a lack of care, a lack of passion.
Trying to hew out places to play as well, you know,
yeah.
always very difficult.
So we, sure. you know, we had that growing up, and then Zach went to school, went to college, and he got his MBA, and I was going to school at the same time. Jonathan was going to school for film.
That's correct.
At the time.
Yep.
So you see how it starts to kind of come together. And
the pieces
then,
of the whole.
Yeah, Zach gets into a new game called The Spoils, and he's like, hey, we used to play games together, we've been off at college, you should come and see this game, check this game, I think you'd love it. I'm like, I don't have time for a collectible card game. Anyway, so I played it a bunch, I fell back in love with that whole card game aspect, and that was the summer that we really started Team Covenant. We got incorporated in 2007, put a website up that was just shattered, just tattered pieces of web content. We started writing articles and selling spoils cards, and that was really the start. And so from there, we've gone from that to having our own store in Tulsa, having a pretty big online retail presence, and also having a big online content presence. Jonathan really took that YouTube channel and the video content to the next level, and that's really what got us on the map in terms of just people understanding and knowing who we were as personalities, as a business and whatnot, and that's kind of always been our, I guess, strategy. Spoiler alert. We really want to provide a ton of value so that rather than like cold calling potential customers and saying, hey, do you want some packs? We're basically providing content, and hopefully you love the content, you watch us, you enjoy it, and then every once in a while we'll say, oh, and by the way, you know, don't forget, we've got a store, we provide these packs as well. And so we try to provide value on both sides of the equation, the kind of exciting, interesting content side and the more technical, fundamental, operational side of actually acquiring the product. So right. We're trying to do everything as best we can.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that's always notable, at least to me, and I assume this is a conscious approach about the way you guys do things, is, you know, every organization inevitably has to figure out specialization versus generalization, doing lots of things and inevitably not doing them very well versus really hammering home and doing things well on a few things. And obviously you guys are kind of in that latter camp. So how, I guess, how do you figure out what games you're going to support? I mean, are you
that's
just all
real
in?
Good question.
Are
that's
you
a
just
great
all
question.
In on the
we
FFGs at this point?
Just asking ourselves that the other day.
Yeah, it's
and
really
good. Every day.
It's yeah. It's an ongoing dialogue, right? Because we do, there's a certain amount of care that we want to spend on everything that we do. And there's a level of kind of rampant, I guess, perfectionism, you would say, that runs throughout us as just people. And that can actually be pretty, that can cause a lot of conflicts too, you know, because you think it's perfect, I don't think it's perfect, and now it's like, well, is it or not? So we have that vibe, and we've been asking, how do we choose how far to go, how many games to carry, especially you're looking at a retail model where it's really nice right now because we have nice, bright, open space. If we keep adding game after game after game, pretty soon we'll end up in the same situation as a lot of the stores that we were kind of running from when we started the experiment. Yeah. So it's a great question. I guess for us, it kind of, FFG essentially fell in our lap a little bit, only insofar as we were looking for a company and a game that was going to really inspire us and motivate us and that we thought would be interesting and worth covering when we first got into the space. And it just so happened that LCGs had started launching at that point. So when you're a tiny company, you need to find a very small niche and try to dominate it. Yeah. That was the strategy, right? We couldn't compete with Miniature Market and Cool 7. These guys are just rolling out products. We need to like try to corner something to get our legs under us. LCGs dropped, and we thought, well, this is an interesting model that nobody thinks you can make money on. So we'll do our best. And we proceeded for a couple of years to learn lessons and try what we could and launch a subscription system, which is still running really strong now. And that's been the most successful part of our entire endeavor with LCGs.
Nice.
And then, you know, we just got to know FFG, honestly. You know, it started out in 2014, 2013, 2012, I think. We just stumbled upon Steve Horvath. We were doing a little Star Wars content.
Yeah, that video is on the web. We're unboxing the first Worlds. They gave everyone a free core set of Star Wars LCG.
There was like 90 people at the first Worlds.
And we were like off, literally in the corner. There was no tables in sight. There was all our corners like plugged into one outlet in the corner that we had to like keep watching out of the corner of our eye. So we're out there like on the floor going through the cards.
And this would have been at the old space.
The old annex. And then some guy just comes creeping through the background. Hey, what you looking at there?
And we're like, oh no, he's ruining this shot.
Yeah, he's ruining this shot. Yeah, and come to find out, it was Steve Horvath. So the second thing we thought was, he's got an FFG shirt on, we're in trouble. Like, we shouldn't be doing this.
He's shutting it down.
But then he just came over and started talking about how much he loved the product, how much he you know. And so we ended up stopping that shoot, doing a whole different shoot with an interview with him, and then coming back to unboxing the core box.
Nice.
All those videos exist. But we started to build those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so you meet Steve, and then you know, people start to get familiar with our content. We start making FFG-centered content, because it was just the games we were interested in at the time. And at that time, the space wasn't particularly interesting for non-board games. I think board games are starting to blow up pretty well. But in terms of, like, the more competitive or interesting, like, card games,
like to call them lifestyle games.
Lifestyle games. That's a great term. Yeah, there wasn't a lot kicking around at that point, and you saw a lot of old looking graphic design, a lot of old looking art, a lot of like old tired concepts, like magic clones and that kind of thing. And they were the only people that we felt were doing anything really exciting in the space. And so we kept picking up game after game, and we were like, we love what you guys are doing for the industry. We think it's actually a really positive effect. They have a much more polished product.
Their presentation is on point. Their art, they're investing in art assets very heavily.
They invested a lot in art, way more than anybody else that we were seeing. The boxes even were just more attractive. So we were like, yeah, as long as you keep doing great stuff, we continue to be interested. And that's kind of where we are now, is they continued to put out games like Arkham.
Right.
And it's great. I mean, it's absolutely great. And not to say that we're bound to FFG, because we're actually really looking at Steamforge right now, too, because they're doing great things in the space. Guild Ball and hopefully Dark Souls and a couple other releases coming up. So we always got our eyes open, and it's really just about, is the game the kind of game that we want to sell and promote that's going to push the industry forward a little bit, kind of, you know, offer a new experience or a positive experience? And then is the company moving the industry forward and offering like a positive element and a positive vibe to tabletop gaming?
Right.
And as long as companies and games are doing those things, they're not just plastering their boxes with, you know, bosoms and you know, Draculas, then everything's fine. And we'll take a look at it for sure. And then the game, of course, just has to be great.
Yeah.
Like, we are interested always in mechanics first. And then where it goes from there is if they also have a nice package.
Is the packaging nice? Is the company good? There's a lot of things. And the real problem is, to your original question, there are a lot of games out there that are really good and more coming out every day. So that is why our conversation is ongoing, because we don't want to miss out on that. But also, we are still seven people, and we're already pushing each one of us to the limit of our creative and professional capacity to do what we do. So we have to make some sacrifices.
A little bit of balancing act.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I was just curious, because as a fan, I sit back and I go, well, these guys are ultra-focusing on these few different games. Like, where's their critical mass?
Yeah.
Like, they have to be constantly vigilant.
Sacrifice the body, man. Yeah. Critical mass is...
constantly vigilant is a good word for it, yeah. Yeah, and hopefully it continues to work out for us. You know, we've been very blessed and very lucky so far to really, you know, have that niche and to be able to operate in it and to add value to it in a way that we're really happy with and proud of. And we hope to bring that to more and more spaces.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a matter of money and time and employees.
Because the last thing we want to do is spread ourselves too thin and not be able to provide the kind of quality content that we enjoy providing and we think is necessary for the kind of games that we support.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So once you decide you're throwing in on a game, how then do you decide how deep you go down that rabbit hole? Because you guys have supported games where maybe you don't give the tokens, or maybe don't support a subscription or something along those lines.
Yeah, this is another very good question.
Yeah, very valid question.
We're bringing the hard-hitting questions.
That's right,
today.
Well, I mean, so the reality is that the subscription element of what we do is really probably the best thing that we bring to the space in terms of a retail store. So if you're like a customer, for instance, we know that we can't compete with the giant just discount warehouses, right? Like, I can't sell a Destiny box for $70 like Miniature Market can. I can't sell a pack for $12 and make any money off of it, because we just don't have the volume.
Sure.
And because we don't have the volume, we don't get the shipping discounts. So now we're already in the hole on 2 points from a customer's point of view. So like, if you want a cheap product, it's very obvious that we can't be that place for you. So then the question becomes, well, what can we offer this space? And some things that we're always talking about in our normal everyday lives is, we just want things to be as easy and as convenient and as effortless as possible, because we value time a lot, right? Like, I think as you get older, you start to value your time more than you do your money, and you're willing to make those trades a lot of the time. So if we can offer a subscription system that allows you to get an LCG product every time it releases, it might not be the absolute cheapest option, but it is the best option for somebody who's just looking to save time and to not have to worry about acquiring product and availability and all that kind of stuff. So we can offer convenience and that kind of value rather than lowest priced product, and that's how we try to compete.
Sure.
So these days, like, it's very important that, and we have X-Wing subscriptions now and Imperial Assault subscriptions, so we're really pushing the model and seeing where we can take it and what we can do with it. And that means that, you know, as we look at what games you might want to support and what games you might want to sell, once they pass all of those tests, then it's okay, well, is this a subscribable game, right? can we actually offer that and it makes sense?
Yeah.
And then is it a game that we think would really be enhanced by some extra, tokens? How do the base tokens look? There's a myriad of questions that go on to decide. And what else is going on in the company, right?
Yeah.
There's always these other considerations where if there's five games that release tomorrow that we're interested in all of them, like, we literally can't make five token sets by the next month. So it's like, okay, well, then as a business, it's like, well, do we have to look at ROI? Like, if we spend X amount of hours doing this, do we think we'll get at least that much plus out of it? Which games seem hotter than others? And
yeah, are our customers interested? I mean, if the customer, we can do everything we can for a game. If the customers aren't interested, and it's just you're pushing rock up the hill forever, that's not going to work.
I'll tell you, that's one of the things that we have learned tremendously, I think, in this business journey that we're on.
Sisyphus references?
Yeah. Keep them hot.
Keep them coming.
Is that you, in the beginning, we started out and we were like, we're going to create content for a lot of the games that don't get the support that they deserve and kind of affect the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys should love this game because it does this, this, and the other thing, and nobody else is talking about it. And we still retain that element of kind of the dream and the vision, but we've realized a lot too that the market itself, like people, what games they're interested in, drives us a bit as well. So when we started, it's like we want to drive the entire thing and say this game is great and you should love it. But obviously the best that we can do at this point, and what we've learned, is show off a game, say this is what it is, this is why we like it, this is what we think is great about it. But if nobody else is interested, then like we can't just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we do have to pull the plug every now and again on some things that we think are great, but that people just aren't interested in, because
sure,
it's not making us any money, right?
Sure.
So there's always this balancing act, and being fans and content creators and business owners and people who are actually have a vision for the future of tabletop gaming, there's a lot of balancing that goes on between those four elements. And it's hard to say that we've got it locked down perfectly.
Yeah, we continue to have these conversations. I mean, on a daily basis, philosophically, figuring out where the line between passion and profit comes in. Because you can go heavy one direction and just lose everybody. You can go heavy the other direction and lose everybody. There has to be a balance between the two, and finding that is a daily struggle.
Absolutely. So then talking about Arkham, specifically, the reason you guys were hooked in here today.
Ah, the card game.
The card game. So, obviously, you guys are, I'm fairly certain, pretty into the co-op games.
Yes,
specifically.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. We grew up actually playing video games together. Obviously.
Oh, right on.
And what we did was
like Double Dragon,
always,
or?
Yes, we
yeah,
always
Dragons,
looked
right.
for two-player cooperative games. Like, that was just the best gaming experience. We almost never played versus games. And I think that carries over when you start to look into tabletop. It's like, yeah, let's all get together and try to achieve something as a team,
mm-hmm.
rather than, like, just compete all the time.
Yeah.
It gets a little stale.
So what about Arkham specifically grabbed you?
Oh, man.
Wow. I mean, I'll start while Steven's thinking, but I also come from I come from an RPG background.
Okay.
I love that experience I have since I got the Red Dragon box whenever I was, like 8, and then Steven and I and our father would play. So I really like the way that the decks are handled. I think it's a really cool, neat little tweak on the whole, you start with this deck represents your character. Your character can get weaknesses through their various journeys. You can upgrade, but only slightly. It's a nice, I really like, I can actually see where it went from Imperial Assault into Arkham, because that idea kind of gets perfected as you have your Imperial deck in Imperial Assault that gets upgraded, but basically remains the same.
Well, in the shades of the LOTR campaign mode,
yes,
too.
Yes, very much so. And so I like that. I like that an awful lot. And I think that's a really cool way of doing things. So taking that and the idea of the character's journey, that campaign, I like quite a bit.
Sure.
I'm not into Lovecraft whatsoever.
That was going to be my follow-up.
Not at all. Didn't know anything, actually, before.
Nothing. Completely know nothing about the entire mythos. It has never been, the kind of, creepy, underworld kind of stuff. That's never been appealing to me. And so I was like, Arkham, we'll see about it. And so whenever Robert and I played the demo at Gen Con,
mm-hmm.
not only did we have the greatest demoer on earth, Amanda.
Oh,
was her
yeah.
name.
We
she
had her, too. She
incredible.
Was
so good.
Incredible.
Quite good.
But aside from that, I finished the game, halfway through the game, I think Robert and I just looked at each other like, grinning from ear to ear. Because we knew, like, it had the secret sauce. Mm-hmm. I was having so much fun. The element of discovery and mystery, and it wasn't about these high-flying heroes, like, you know, in this giant fantasy realm, just like making their will happen to all those things around them. It was about discovery and freedom and the kind of just what's behind that next door.
Yep.
And always having to be on guard and getting taken aback by the weird things that were happening that you could never have predicted, right?
Yep.
And so we when the demo was over, we started talking about it, Robert and I, having him not really being into Lovecraft either, and a longtime Lord of the Rings fan, as you know, Sean.
Yeah.
And we were like, this game is phenomenal. It's just straight up phenomenal. It doesn't matter what the skin or the theme is. Love the mechanics, love the exploration element of it, love the way that the weaknesses and things are coming into play, and the equipment, all that stuff, it just clicked. And so I think the design is so flawless, the mechanical design of the game, that didn't matter what the theme was. Yeah. And now I'm actually pretty into Lovecraft because of it.
Yeah.
So it really turned me.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I think I came into Lovecraft. I played the Eldritch Horror board game.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That. Enjoyed that because, again, co-op. But yeah, then as soon as Arkham hit, I was just like, all right, well, let's go back and read some of these things. It's all public domain anyway,
sure.
It's free. But, okay, so then, all right, you love the game.
Yep.
At what point do you decide, yeah, we're doing tokens for this? Because... agree or disagree, I think FFG's base token set is among best work.
Dude, it's their best work.
Steven knows. I was like...
it's their best work.
This is going to be incredibly difficult for me to design because the base stuff... There's usually, whenever I'm designing a token set, the first thing I do is I look at the tokens and I say, how can these be better?
Yep.
And I'm looking at these Arkham tokens and I'm like, these can't be better.
They're great.
These are great. These are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So that was difficult.
Yeah. I mean, so we had... there's a couple of considerations. One was, if you think about the entire pipeline of us as a business handling a game, how can we add value and how can we capitalize on our presence in that content space? Really, the best thing for us is if we can design a token set up front and then also offer subscription services along the way, mm-hmm. that all the content that we create, that we want to create anyway, gains a little bit more value for us,
sure.
right? So it's one thing to create videos that you want to create, but you don't have anything to sell.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, we're happy to contribute, but like that costs us a decent bit of money to pay all the people to do that.
And that also, I mean, if you're not receiving anything back, and this is an incredibly valuable lesson I just like to insert, if you're doing any sort of art or anything for passion, you know, that you're passionate about, but you're not getting anything back that allows you to continue that, it really, you start fighting burnout in a pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because you're giving, and there's nothing to sustain you.
So there's that. And so we looked at it, we said, okay, we've got Jonathan, he's a designer. We can design a lot of different things for a lot of different games, and even just for the store space and all these kinds of things. So a lot of design that could be done at any moment, web and otherwise. And we've got Ben, who's doing videos and is really pretty well-versed now in the video space and can create really good content. So that gives Jonathan more time now to work on design projects. So the first thing that we jumped into, as Jonathan really taking over the, having more time to really explore design,
sure.
was let's do a token set for Arkham and see if we can find some things that would really improve the experience along the way, right? Let's just see if we can get some prototypes going. If nothing clicks, let's just drop it, because like you said, the base tokens are great. And if something starts to manifest, then it's worth investing a couple of days plus of time to experiment with that and see if something happens. So then Jonathan starts sketching and designing and drawing, hands-on. We start looking at, well, you know what's really annoying to me actually is like having to do one and then change that to the three and then having different tokens for all of that. And they're cardboard, so it doesn't feel like the tangible Arkham universe that you want, right? And so there's a little bit of a disconnect there between the theme and the flavor and the actual components. And so Jonathan busts out these beautiful, like, sketched brain designs and heart designs. We have the flipping from one to three, so that becomes super easy to do. We're moving them around the board and doing ones and twos and ones and threes, changing everything, working with different colors. And it's like, man, this has really come together. And the one thing that we wish that we had was some kind of a supply recognizer, right?
These tokens were playtested really more than any other token set so far. Like, I would make a...
Maybe because we just wanted to play, right?
Yeah, that could be.
I would make a prototype set. We'd send it out to a few playtesters. Steven and Robert would take it into their play session. Everyone would come back with notes. I'd scour with them to try to find, okay, is there something that we can do that, again, is adding value to these tokens that is not there before? And so that's how the supply token came about. Because I remember my first playthrough in Arkham, when they put a resource on the card that's now an arcane resource, that was a little bit... it was a little bit confusing to me.
And I always hated that I would look down on my board and I would be like, well, are these resources or are these on my supply cards? Did I, like,
actually... Especially if you've got, like, a long sleeve shirt on.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they go.
Knock them over.
They don't feel arcane. You know, it's just a crate. It doesn't feel necessarily arcane.
Sure.
So that was one of the things. Eventually we changed. We were at 1-3. We changed from 1-2.
Okay.
So it was very easy to flip up because as we played more, we realized the basic arithmetic of the game was really more in ones and twos and never in these, like, in these giant, like you have in Destiny, where you have a big, you can go 1-3 very easily there.
Yeah.
But Arkham, you sort of tick up as
take a horror, take a horror,
death.
Yeah, exactly.
And then ultimately, whenever that Doom design came out, I think that was just straight up money. It was like you can do a 1-3 flip on the Doom, or the 1-2 flip on the Doom, which is phenomenal. It has the moon phases on it,
Yeah. Those
lunar phases. It's the biggest token on the board. And when I first play tested with those, we had a set that was all the same size, then we had a set where the Doom was bigger. That stark black Doom being giant on the board with the red paint.
Just doing a quick sweep to see where you're at.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was sitting over there on the side. It was sitting on these necromancers and things. And I was just like, this is the game right here. Mm-hmm. I gotta see this Doom, and it's got to feel terrifying. And I think when that really sunk in for me, it's like, yeah, let's go full steam ahead on this thing. And that's when we did it, yeah.
Awesome. So when I think about, I have no skill in design at all, but when I think about Jonathan slaving away at these things, I'm like, how many different ways can you abstract resources? Do you have to beat yourself up every game that comes out?
You should really ask him. Yeah, you should have this conversation.
Beating yourself up every day is exactly, unfortunately, what I do. There's the process that I go through is... pretty much twofold. I tried to understand, this is going to get arty and high-minded, but I try to understand the essence of the world. But I try to understand it on such a foundational level, like what's an angle in this world that represents, that only is represented in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So what that does is I go and I, usually for Arkham, I put on a bunch of Lovecraft audiobooks. I set all of the cards in front of me. I look at how their details are around them. I look at Lovecraft fan art. I start listing. I watched a great documentary on YouTube about Lovecraft in general. Watch that and try to get into the mind of where he was, what he was in, whatever he created. And
you remember what that one's called? People are going to ask.
I just know that Guillermo del Toro is in it.
Oh, okay.
And so if you type in Lovecraft documentary, I'm pretty sure the thumbnail's of Guillermo, and you should be able to find it. So Lovecraft something. It's very, very good. But you start to realize, like, it's a sort of a 1920s pulp world, right? That's it was published in the pulps. So you get this 1920s thing, so then you start looking up 1920s details, and you start thinking, well, what about resources in the 1920s? Because
that's where the Art Deco thing comes into play.
That's where the Art Deco,
too, yeah.
That's where that started to pull itself in. Mm-hmm. Because you wanted to represent, especially with resources and a little bit of supply, a number of things. And that's one of the things I don't like is when they have a very specific item for a very general solution, like
general
thing. Yeah.
If I were designing resources, everyone would just be a different flavor of coins. So.
Right. And that's the thing. These in Arkham, you can have coins, crates, ideas, and they can represent any number of things. So I wanted to give it sort of like glitzy Gilded Age border. I got that on there. It looked pretty good. You know, tweaked it around, and it kind of meshed with how the cards look. And so that was the resource. I was able to then take that design and then move it over to the health and the sanity, which allowed me to put like kind of an Art Deco outside design with some like hash marks. That was kind of cool, pulpy stuff. And then organicness of the
Professorial
Lovecraft
quality.
Universe. Yeah, yeah, professorial quality, exactly. I was able to pull that in and like really make it like gross, you know, like because ultimately that's sort of this Lovecraftian thing, which is humans are gross, you know, and if you look at anything too close, like it may just like end up freaking you out. And so I really wanted to pull that in. You start building it up, and then you tear it back down, and you build it up and tear it back down, and eventually you get something that's pretty worthwhile.
So the 1920s sort of stained glass, like anti-church motif came through, and with that in mind, I was able to design the rest of the things.
Although especially the supply token, like the, yes. the stained glass motif there. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen stained glass with bullets.
Yeah,
it's pretty
brilliant. Yeah, that was, and that's a direct example of that. One, supply is going to represent so many things. And so I want, no matter where you, if you look down at supply token, if I've done my job right, whatever you have in mind, it becomes. You know, if you want to see the arcane flash in the middle, you see that. If you want to see the bullets, you see that. If you want to see, you know, the ammo belt or whatever, you see those things. And so, or like even the, there's like a weird cross in the middle, like maybe for, you know, more arcane stuff or flashlight.
For Zoe,
yeah. And
let's not discount the complete and total frustration that pretty much every resource token brings to the table.
Oh, yes.
As
oh,
you
my
must
gosh.
Imagine, right? So Jonathan's been through like 10 plus resource tokens at this point. So every time that is like the pony that has to be ridden before anything can really like get done. But once that's done, usually it kind of flows forward.
Yeah, we're
from
off,
there.
To, off to the race.
But just, you know, the,
must be swallowed.
The papers in the air, like head on the desk kind of moments like, with the resource token
I've
is
got,
really excellent.
I've got sketches on sketches on sketches of what that daggum resource token was going to be. And I think eventually it turned out. But yeah, it's a struggle. I mean, how do you represent everything with a few lines and some paint, you know? It's difficult.
Well, and the etching work has gotten so detailed on your guys' stuff now, especially on that supply token. Is
gorgeous. Thank you.
So, I mean, on the fabrication side, you guys have like a specific person that you work with? Are you doing that in-house?
Or? Yeah, totally. It started out, we had essentially a friend of ours who we met through the store, the retail store. And so he would come in and play games, and we got to know him really well. And then he started doing some projects at the Fab Lab in Tulsa, named Derek. He did some stuff in the Fab Lab. And so he was like cranking out these kind of cool prototypes for things just in his spare time, his free time. He brought them into the store and we started like, man, this stuff's pretty cool. I mean, it's nice that you can make these things. And then started ticking around and saying, well, you know, what if we like made some tokens ourselves? Like some Star Wars LCG tokens or some X-Wing templates, whatever it was. Things that would be compatible with those games and that maybe we could add some value. And honestly, Sean, to be honest, at that point, like we just had so little in the store to sell that when people would come in and they'd be like, we want to support you guys. Like, we love what you guys are doing. And it's like, if you already have all the packs, I mean, we don't have anything. So we were looking at, you know, do you want to do the t-shirt route? Do you want to do these kinds of things? Like, So it's like, well, maybe this is something that could both add value and could give us a little more revenue. So that looks good. And then it really started from there. So then he got to doing more and more of that kind of stuff at Fab Lab. That led to him buying his own laser because he was doing enough there. And Fab Lab was really for prototyping. So he bought his own laser, took a big risk. And then started his own business with that laser where he does his work. And then we are his, basically we just kind of grew up together. Our two businesses started growing up together. As we got bigger, obviously he got bigger to accommodate the increase in token sales. And that's where we are. So it's the same guy. He's been doing it the whole time, developed some really good processes. And I mean, you know, we get a lot of, I guess, complaints about price, which I don't know that anybody who's selling anything doesn't get complaints about price. But the reason for that is that the process is so meticulous and so detailed and takes a longer amount of time than just, you know, scattering a laser across a bunch of acrylic. And then we also have a really extensive QA process. Make sure that everything that goes out the door that comes to us as Covenant is already QA'd, and then we QA it before we send it out. So it's very rare that something happens in the token ordering process that you don't get what you ultimately want. And we pay for that time on both ends.
And the loss rate. We have a certain amount of loss on everything that we produce because it's a little bit off, it's a little bit crooked, it wasn't filled right, and it's got to go. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of loss rate that has to be compensated.
It's pretty tough to recover it after it's been filled in with paint, I suppose.
Yeah. Sure.
So I got to ask the burning question on everyone's mind.
Sure.
Do you guys have plans at this point to tackle the chaos bag?
Yeah.
Oh man, I've got so many plans.
Here's a little spoiler alert. So we actually have a product coming before that I think is going to be absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
I won't say anything. I guess we
Arkham specific?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah. And I guess we don't. I mean, it's hard. I guess every business kind of learns this lesson. You don't really promise anything unless it's guaranteed. So this isn't really guaranteed. So all that I'll say is, what we're trying to do is solve the problem of your cards and tokens being on the board in a non-separate way from the rest of the action. So whenever I was playing, I wanted something that was almost like my little
Arkham
console or character sheet that was containing all of the elements that were affecting my character, so I could quickly see where I was and all my stuff, and then I could see the board as kind of separate entities. Sometimes it bleeds together, especially if you're on a smaller space. It's hard to find room for all that, and then your resources are kind of sitting in a pile over here, and then that can't be the game's pile, and you don't want to get the two confused. And kind of
stacking assets.
Yeah.
A real long sleeves problem like we talked about earlier in the cast.
So we're looking to solve that first, and that'll be very soon. We're prototyping that currently, and then definitely looking at the Chaos Bag.
Awesome.
If you're thinking about it, like if we had launched the Chaos Bag, it would have delayed the tokens that we have now for months, probably.
Yeah, sure.
Because we have to work in a new medium.
It's
We can't engrave.
The Chaos Bag is 100% new.
All new materials.
The whole thing.
So we're looking at ways to like encase them or work on, like I said, new materials, heat press onto stuff, all sorts of things. So that takes some time and some experimental development type time.
Yeah, quite a bit actually. Because I've got a lot of ideas, but are the ideas viable? Are the ideas cost effective?
Yeah.
Is it even possible? You know, like so you have to run through all these lists, and that takes time. And so again, we made the decision to bring out the tokens first while we prototype everything else. And it may be a very, very long time before we're able to get something that fits our standard out in the Chaos Token.
And honestly, we may never get there. I don't want to promise anything we can't deliver on, but we're working with those kinds of concepts in mind, and if we think we can bring something to market that's going to add value and that people will pay for, then we'll definitely do it. But, you know, we can't bring out a $200 Chaos Bag set.
Yeah, because that's a lot of tokens. So no matter, whatever we do, because the Chaos Bag does require so many tokens, the price point is automatically an issue.
Yeah.
Unless they're, if it's just like incredible. Like if we come up with something gilded and like, well, that'd be great. Like,
yeah.
But you can't have like just a basic set of Chaos tokens at a high price point and expect that to work. So
sure,
we're doing what we can do.
Awesome. Well, that's exciting to hear.
Great.
So another question that's burning. So the source of Team Covenant's power, does it lie mostly in the beards?
I don't know. That's a real good question, I guess, isn't it? What would I say? I would say that Jonathan has shaved his beard a few times, and it did not seem to affect our bottom line.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I stay pretty well trimmed, and I think that if we're looking for maximum beard power, I would have to give that to Robert. Mm-hmm. I think he has the finest.
He's got a very nice beard. Very nice beard. It doesn't. I do feel like not having a beard does diminish my power because I can't look at myself in the mirror. But you know, that's a personal issue. I don't think it affects the company.
All right, so then the last thing I'll ask you guys is at the end of every show, we like to do a little segment called Tentacle Time.
Okay.
Where everyone who's on talks about something else that's grabbing them.
That's grabbing their free time.
That's really cool.
So you guys got any books, other games, TV shows you're into right now?
Oh, man. Yes, actually. Oh, there's a lot of things I could talk about here. Let me talk about this on the show, since you guys are, everybody's probably into like mysteries and whatnot.
Sure.
Jonathan's going to love that I give this recommendation.
Ooh.
I've been absolutely obsessed with this show called Shetland.
Oh, the Pony Show.
On Netflix. Oh, yeah, the Pony Show. It's like,
this is a long-standing
It has nothing to do with ponies. So it's BBC Scotland, and it's basically like a, you know, your traditional kind of procedural crime drama, except it's in Scotland, it's on the islands. Their third season is actually a 6-part series, so from 1 to 6 is the same plot line that they're exploring over 6 episodes. I think it's exceedingly well shot. There's a lot of that kind of isolation and desolation of this like tiny island experience, and it's just really good old school detective work, and I have been obsessed with the show since I first saw it. I absolutely love it. So I would suggest Shetland on Netflix if you get the chance. I'm also, I think I'm Scottish, pretty Scottish, so I might have some genetic roots to the scene and the setting as well, but I really love that show.
A little nice. Predisposed.
Yeah, and so I'm a big, big theory guy.
Okay.
And in our podcast I've been talking about recently, watching a lot of video essays that are on YouTube now. Folding ideas and every frame of painting and stuff like that.
Mm.
But the thing that's really been grabbing me recently is there is a book called Super Better.
Okay.
And it's by a girl named Jane McGonigal, and she has a TED Talk if anyone wants to like start looking at it. But the ultimate idea is that we've all known, I think, that games
have helped us with our friendships, with our communities, with being better people, and we see this. I mean, I think it's you know, look around worlds right now.
Pretty
right?
Evident.
It's undeniable. Well, what she has written a book, and it is talks about all games in general, including video games. But I think a lot of it is applicable to the board game space. I almost lost that one.
Yeah, had to find it under the table.
And so back
it's,
in.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm about 3 chapters in at this point, and it's very interesting the kind of stuff that she's talking about, and then seeing it and trying to put together the pieces of, well, are people are doing this naturally and it's working out great? Like, what happens whenever people are doing it intentionally? You know, and so that has really been grabbing me, and that's really been getting my wheels turning. So.
Interesting.
How about you, Sean?
Awesome. Well, I don't know. Is there time for anything else besides Arkham? I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect.
Yeah.
The video games.
Yeah. Heard
much,
good or? Things. Man, every once in a while, but actually, I don't know. We play a lot of like Wii, which is
I gotta
maybe
tell you, I'm Zelda crazy right now.
Yeah.
Too.
Okay. Ooh. Yep. That's it's a thing. I've heard Breath of the Wild is.
Oh my gosh.
We're still like, you know, getting together and like doing Wii bowling and like golf.
Nintendo Lands.
I still hold the like semi-annual Rock Band. Part.
Yeah.
Nice.
So,
yeah. Exactly. Right there exactly. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's not good.
Exactly.
Anymore.
I mean, who doesn't like to press the little plastic buttons and feel
exactly.
like they're?
No, that's fantastic.
That's one of my favorite things.
All right. Awesome. Well, Jonathan. And Steven. I looked at the wrong directions on
that's
that
right.
one.
No one needs to know.
Thank you both for coming on. This was a treat. We're big fans of your guys. So,
thank
guys,
you so
if you
much.
Haven't checked them out yet, check out both the Team Covenant website, where they offer the subscriptions that make it super easy for you guys to get your LCG packs. And check out the Arkham tokens, because, you know, I'll tell you what. I liked them when I saw them. And you take beautiful pictures. But
oh,
there's
thank you.
There's something about getting them in your hands.
I will
We've been talking
that,
about that.
Yeah.
There's. It's a question mark of, can you truly like capture this stuff on film in any way? Is it just like me doing a bad job? Because like usually I'm trying to lead the marketing effort on these things, or is it just that you want to give a glimpse of this thing and then save a little bit of surprise for when people actually get them in their hands? Because there is just a difference between seeing those pictures online and grabbing them, and I'm so happy to hear you say
truly,
that
truly.
And really appreciate that. That means a lot to us.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, thanks, guys. We're going to wrap it up there and toss it back to the show regular.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I know I did. So our original intent was to splice this into our next episode, but we figured, you know, it was nice enough, and it ended up being a little bit longer than originally planned that we'd just release this as a bonus episode. So even though I mentioned going back to the episode proper, well, this is all you're getting. Just me. So again, I will reiterate, definitely go check out all the things that Team Covenant are doing. They've got really high quality and high production quality videos that they put out. Their tokens are awesome. I know I made, you know, essentially a joke about internal Tauntaun last time with my initial reaction with them, but honest to God, and I'm not shilling at all, I'm receiving no kickbacks outside of just having the tokens themselves. Once you get them in your hand, they take on a new quality, and even though their pictures are beautiful, it just doesn't quite capture them. So definitely give them a look if you haven't already. So I think we'll wrap it up there, and we will see you guys next time for episode 15 of Mythos Busters.